all these processes, we experience, we are able to experience these processes. There is nothing within this fathom-long body, nothing that we can call the I, nothing that we can call the mind. There is no entity, no permanent object within this body. We find only energies in a state of flux, mental and physical energies. It is when one begins to realize the unsatisfactoriness, the transient nature of all worldly phenomena, then comes the answer to the profound answer to our question, what do we want in life? We go on in life without any definite purpose. There is no automatic purpose in life. Everyone, each person, lives according to his or her aspirations or purpose in life. We all have different ambitions, different aspirations. When we go round and round, live verse after verse, having seen the nature of life, having seen the fleeting, impermanent nature of life, we question ourselves, what do we want in life? Do we want unsatisfactoriness? Do we want to continue to live in this state of suffering, in this state of unsatisfactoriness? All sensible beings, all sensible people will want to get out of suffering. It is really the answer to this question. With the answer to this question, that one begins the search within. One begins the search for the sublime truth. It is upon the answer to this question, what do I want in life? Many have not thought seriously about this question. But those whose minds have become matured, this question arises. One becomes mindful of the situation around us, and then the question arises, what do I want in life? With the dawn of wisdom, sublime knowledge arises. When one sees the transient nature of all worldly phenomena, then comes that profound answer to the question, who am I? What am I? Nothing but a bundle of energies. No I, no me, no my, no mine. Everybody speaks of, this is my, this is mine. It has become a very big mining industry. When this mining industry is shut down, then all the problems disappear. Then we see that individual just like the lotus, just like the lotus in full bloom, aloof from the muddy grounds, aloof from the muddy waters. This is the purity of that person. The aim of Buddhism is not merely to detach. Detachment is not the mere aim of Buddhism. It is not the mere. It is not the only teaching. It is a means to an end. We become detached of things. We detach ourselves from the worldly pleasures so that we can build our minds, so that we can calm, purify, cleanse this mind, so that we can see the nature of things really as they are. When we see the nature of things, when we see things as they really are, what do we see? We see only transient nature, change, impermanency in everything, in all phenomena. That which is change is subject to unsatisfactoriness. That which is subject to unsatisfactoriness is subject to substancelessness, is subject to no self, no soul, which people conceive as something pure, as something permanent. It is through the realization of this characteristics, these three characteristics of existence one sees in this world, there is nothing that we can cling to. There is nothing that we can hold on to, nothing to grasp. There is emptiness. This is what the voidness is about. What is there that we can cling to in this world? Our house, our property, our cars, our jewelry, our money? No. We don't take these along with us when we die. What do we take with us? If there is anything that we can call our own, it would be this good and bad actions, that which we call good and bad karma. It is because of our wholesome karma, it is because of our good actions, we are able to experience a happy state of existence. We are able to have the basic requirements of life and more. It is because of our unwholesome actions that we are born in this world in a miserable condition. Some are born without even the basic requirements of life. Why? What is the cause of this? The teachings of the Buddha points clearly to actions. The actions of the individual. One is responsible for one's own action. It is by oneself that one becomes pure. No one else can do us harm. No one else can purify us. We only can purify ourselves. It is only ourselves that can purify our minds. We can't even purify other people's mind. When we are sick, we have to take medicine ourselves. We can't ask our parents, our good friends, you take the medicine for me, I become well. There is no meaning in this. But when we look around us, there are all kinds of philosophies. There are all kinds of teachings in this world today. all profess to have the truth. Some says, this is the only truth, the only one, the only way. All others are false. Another teacher comes and say, mine is the right one, all others are not right. Yet another one comes and say, my teacher has found a way, all others are wrong. When we compare what all these teachers are saying, we find what they are saying, they have different views to things. Then, what is truth? Where is the truth? Who is speaking the truth? This is a relevant point. The more suffering that arises, the more emotional problems there are in this world, the more religious people there are to come to save you from your emotional problems. These teachers are at different levels of development. The Buddha has pointed out, during his time, there were all these streams of thinking. There is no new teachings in the world today. No new religions. 2,500 years and more ago in India, during the time of the Buddha, even a little before the time of the Buddha, there were various streams of thinking. If we are to analyze these different streams of thinking, we can find, we can classify them into six kinds. There is those who believe in gods. There are those, among those who believe in gods, there are those who maintain there are many gods. Polytheism. There are those who maintained not many gods. There must be one powerful God. There is monotheism. Among those who maintain this monotheism, one powerful, one almighty God, some say that this God has personal forms. They look like human being, only think they are very old with long beards. Some say it cannot be a personal God. It is an impersonal force. It is an impersonal force that is felt all everywhere. These are the different concepts. They existed during the time of the Buddha. Among those who believe in creation, there were those who say that this life is the only life. After this life, eternal hell or eternal paradise. There were those who say, not only life, there are many, many births. And among them, they have counted the exact number of births. They say, if you go through so many thousands of births, then after that you automatically gain your liberation. Such are the different views that people hold during the time of the Buddha. Apart from these believers in creation, there are those who believe in the soul. There are those who believe in a personal soul, in the Atman or Atta. There are those who believe in a universal soul. in a universal
para Brahman, and their ambition, their aspiration is to get this universal, is to get this personal soul to unite with the universal soul. And they explain the creation, all this whole world, whether animate or inanimate, they are nothing but sparks of the universal soul. The Buddha challenged this view to say, if there is something permanent, there is something pure, would it be in the nature to get into an impure body? Would it be? How can it get out? How can something pure, permanent be broken into pieces? Are these not the thoughts, the evolution of thoughts of the human mind? Besides the soul believers, there are those who believe in nature, Mother Nature, things that they cannot attribute to, they cannot understand. They say it is Mother Nature. Mother Nature brings, Mother Nature provides, Mother Nature destroys. Those who do not cling to this teaching, they hold the view that life is determined, that our life is predestined. We are fated. Everything is fated. In that case, what is the purpose of living if we are just puppets, if we have been created to do certain things? We have no freedom. The Buddha challenges this philosophy. The Buddhist understanding of karma, the law of cause and effect, is not one of fatalism. Although many people, when they hear about karma, they tend to have the view that, oh, this is my karma. This, when they fall down, they say, bad karma. When they get sick, they say, bad karma. If it is your karma, if you cannot change, if there is no way to overcome this karma, then there is no liberation. There cannot be any liberation. The Buddha has pointed out categorically that it is possible for us to overcome through effort, through wisdom. We will be able to overcome the wrongs that we have done. We may not be able to eradicate them. We may not be able to substitute, but we can overshadow the effects. There are different kinds of karma. There are different kinds, different intensities of karma. It is those actions that have been performed very strongly in the minds that these actions definitely bear results. And when they bear results, then we have to patiently bear it. But there are many other actions which we have performed. They are not so strong that it is possible for us to overshadow or postpone the effects until such time we are able to strengthen our mind, purify our mind, and then cut off the roots of greed, hatred and ignorance, and once and for all cease from all good and bad actions. That is how liberation is possible. It is this law of karma which is neither 100% chance, neither 100% fatalism. It is the middle path. And this is what the Buddha taught. Rejecting all the other philosophies, teaching for 45 years, the Buddha said, what he discovered, only two things that he discovered. He discovered what is known as the real central philosophy of Buddhism, the central teachings of Buddhism, Paticca Samuppada. He discovered how things are related to one another, how things are produced, not without any cause, not only one cause. There is no first cause, there is no single cause in Buddhism. When we speak about cause and effect, the cause is to be understood as a harmony of causes that is able to produce an effect. That is what the law of cause and effect is about. It is when we begin to understand this law of cause and effect, it is when we begin to understand the nature of things, the real nature of things that have been causally produced. These two things. One is to understand the law of dependent origination, the law how things arises through causes, through conditions. And then to understand the very things that has been produced causally. These are the two things that the Buddha says he realized, he discovered. And this is the truth, he said. Whether a Buddha arises or not, the truth is there. The law of dependent origination is there. Whether a Tathagata arises or not, such is the universality of the law. That law, that is the profound knowledge. That is the ultimate knowledge, which when realized, brings us to real peace, which when realized, enables us to overcome all forms of sufferings once and for all. That is the end of our search for ultimate truth. Now, in order to pave the way for the realization, in order to pave the way for the search for the ultimate truth, we have organized this novitiate program, the first of its kind in this part of the world. And now that we are coming to the end of the program, I hope the novices and the upasikas would have gained some understanding, some insight into the process of Buddhist education. Buddhist education is one which paves the way for the individual to look within, to live the here and now, and to understand oneself, to understand the nature of oneself. It is only by understanding oneself that one is able to truly understand another person. It is only when we come to understand another person that we would be able to live in peace and harmony. We would be able to pave the way for greater peace and harmony within the individual, within the family, within the society, within the nation, within the world. This is how Buddhist education has to contribute towards not only peace within, but also peace without, to world peace. In conclusion, I wish once again to express my sincerest gratitude to the Venerable Master, the Venerable Sek Hong Chun, all the trustees and management committee of the temple, Kong Ming San Po Kak Si, for their full support and cooperation towards making this novitiate program a success. I hope this temple, this monastery, will live up to its name, that may it grow from brightness to brightness, good health and peace to you all. Bhavatu sabba mangalam, rakkhantu sabba devata, sabba buddhanu bhavena sada soti bhavantu te. Bhavatu sabba mangalam, rakkhantu sabba devata, sabba dhammanu bhavena sada soti bhavantu te. Bhavatu sabba mangalam, rakkhantu sabba devata, sabba sanghanu bhavena sada soti bhavantu te. Good health and peace to you all.
Thank you, Venerable Mahendra. In order to show our appreciation, ladies and gentlemen, could you please rise, put your palms together, and say sadhu three times to our distinguished speaker, Venerable Mahendra. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.